Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. It has been a very, very positive week around here. You know, the Easter Bunny was good to me over the weekend. The Easter Bunny from State Fair brought me over some delicious blackened chicken and some crab. I stopped at Fadley's. I saw Damie. I brought a crab cake home. I made that on Sunday night after the Orioles you swept away the weekend. I've had a heck of a weekend, but I'm about to get a green screen here, Dom. We're about to do the recon here, and our friends at El Guapo gave me a green shirt, so the green screen is going to make it impossible for me to wear this, but I thought I'm going to go Easter look for you today to honor our sponsors that all in my belly. It's why I probably look a little chunky monkey today. And that's cool because I probably did have a little bit of that over the weekend as well. Some mac and cheese, which you have to get if you go to Fadley's, and you have to get the Brussels sprouts if you go to a State Fair. And I did. How are you? Happy spring to you. I saw you doing things, quite frankly, made me a little nervous, Don. I saw like people in your kitchen and stuff. I hope everybody's got shots, but I saw you had a pretty normal Easter for the most part, right?
Absolutely remarkable. And again, we did, you know, recognizing that as the experts continue to tell us, Dr. Fauci and others, we're not there yet. In recognition of that, we did with the family eat outside. We did have only a couple of people at a table, so we spatially distanced. But to have the extended family together again, we were talking about, Linda puts together this yearly photo book every year, and last year's Easter photos were pretty sad. There really weren't any Easter photos. So the Easter photos will be back. I noticed.
Is there any family you look at and think like, man, that's a hell of a family? Because most people look at your family and, you know, from all accounts, your family has all tragedies and stories and divorces and triumphs and sad. You've had all of that, your family. But like, you love family more than anybody I know that loves family, literally.
Yeah,
I wonder if you admire somebody else's love of their family.
Oh, yeah, there are many, many. If I started to list them, I would offend somebody by leaving them out. You know, it's interesting, Nestor, that you say. I always remind folks that when they'll say that, your family, you know, it's large and you get together. And I do remind them we have the same ups and downs as every family. We have the same successes, the same failures. But I am going, this is recon on steroids, isn't it? Because you just touched a nerve. At some point, I'm going to write extensively about where I think that feeling about family came from for both myself and my brother. And if somebody put me on a couch with Dr. Phil, I think probably a lot of that comes from the fact that my dad left, came back from Korea when I was three and my brother was one, and left for the West Coast and never came back. So we grew up with a single mom when nobody had single moms. I always look at my mother. That's why she to me is one of the most remarkable human beings ever on the planet, that she raised two, you know, sort of wild and crazy boys back in the early 50s when we were youngsters, when really there weren't. As I look around and looked in my class, you know, today, if my grandchildren look in their class, for better or worse, a lot of their pals have moms and dads who are divorced. It's just not unusual. Unfortunately, that's who we are.
It was today. A secret society back then.
You know, Mike and I have talked about it. I can think of one other boy that we knew, one other family that we knew. Other than that, can't think of any. Now, again, we were fortunate and we're outliers, and I have written about this, so people often know this about me.
See, I'm reading Tipping Point. See,
well, there you go.
We're perfect.
We were outliers in the sense that we had multiple uncles on both sides of our family that stepped in and filled that dad void. Plus, as I said, this amazing mom who went from game to game to game. It was remarkable. And the other thing that made us outliers, and again, it's a credit to my mom, and it'll be Mother's Day before long, and this probably sparks me to write a reminiscence of her. For whatever reason, she made a decision, and I'm guessing it had to do with she put her boys in front of her. And I never had that discussion with her, and I wish I had. But she made a decision to stay close to my dad's family, to my dad's parents, so my grandparents, and my dad's brothers and sisters, who were incredible aunts and uncles, and continue to be incredible aunts and uncles to Mike and me. So not many moms, when they've been deserted by their husband with a three-year-old and a one-year-old who heads to the West Coast to never return, make a decision, I think the boys and I need to remain connected to his family. So that was pretty remarkable. That's sort of off track for the recon, but it is
about
Easter.
Family. And I guess even bringing it full circle, the Zimmerman thing over the weekend for the Orioles, you know, when local kids did well, whether it's Jim Traber or Bill Ripken, certainly Cal Ripken, my side of the town, Mike Bielecki. I had Denny Nagel on last week. I had an extended conversation.
We're going to have the clerics on, you know. We've reached out to Adam and his dad.
You know, what on Easter Sunday to have a kid pitch like that at Fenway Park, to have his friends and family go up there in Loyola gear, and it sounded to me like they were heckling the Red Sox fans from the beginning, especially when it got to be 9, 10, 11 to nothing, whatever it was. But it touches home to you because, like, you know Kolarik well. Zimmerman, you know, I was with Damy Hahn at Fadley's on Friday. I picked up crab cakes. I dropped a couple of crab cakes and some carrot slaw and whatnot off to a Chris Pike. I got a double order of mac and cheese for me. Still got a little left for the championship game on Monday night. And she said, that kid was in my house when he was a kid. I've known him his whole life. And then you text me, Marty Gary, who we're talking about doing different things with crab and True Blue and eating Maryland crab cakes. We'll be talking more about that. But, you know, anyone in the Loyola family, anybody in Ellicott City, anybody in extended local baseball here or played against them, you know, Catholicly, whatever it is, what a story. I mean, hell of a story.
You mentioned,
seems like a good kid, right?
You mentioned Marty and Ann Gary. You know, Marty is, again, it's Smaltimore, right, personified. Marty is my brother's mother-in-law. So Bridget, Mike's wife, her brother Marty, his wife's sister is Zimmerman's mom. So, you know, to be watching Masson.
That's Smaltimore.
To watch those images, watch them cheering. I actually, you know, took a photo of the TV and sent it to Marty during the game. But, I mean, I'm sure, you know, they're on cloud nine. It was a great story, Nestor. And, you know, on top of it, you know, you and I have watched sports. I mean, I've watched it forever. And we're going to have Ron Cassie on later this week. I can't wait, who's written an incredible article about the Orioles coming back to town in 1954. You certainly weren't around, but at least in my brain, I think I remember as a four-year-old, 1954. Certainly the mom that I talk about started taking me to games that early. But I think, and react to this, Nestor, I was telling folks yesterday when we're outside, you know, we don't normally timestamp these things, but we're doing this. We're actually doing this episode on Easter Monday, the day after Easter Sunday. When we were outside talking about the game, we were talking about sports adages or sports, you know, sort of superstitions in sports or things that people say about sports. I said, I think the one that is the most true of all is that you are never as good as you look when you're winning, and you're never as bad as you look when you're losing. And I think that was on full display at Fenway Park, the first series of the season. Do we think the Orioles are going to win more than 81 games? I love the Orioles. I don't think they're going to win more than 81 games. But you wouldn't know that from the weekend, right?
I don't think they're going to win more than 71 games, but no, you would not know that from the weekend. I think it spoke to me about the Red Sox, and, you know, I went down this river, and, you know, I've had this chat with Marty Conway and with Luke Jones, and I'm sure I'll have it with others later in the week, but and what expectations of opening day are for those who go. You know, I guess my wife's been in Florida for a couple of weeks doing all sorts of stuff. And I sort of fancied myself, well, you know, that'll be a day where I'll get out, you know, I'll go out on opening day and I'll go to the game. And I guess in my own naive way, right, I forget what a quarter of a crowd would look like or whatever the 4,000 people they let in the Fenway Park. And it happened all weekend, Don, right? Because I watched a lot of basketball last two weekends, and they keep the court tight, you know, and you don't really see fans and you don't miss the band so much, especially if you're not really paying attention. You're just watching it a little bit. But this past weekend, you start watching and you're watching baseball in an empty stadium where like Marty Gary's sitting there, you know, with nobody around him. He's got a whole section to himself, right? And it didn't have the energy, and the game was kind of long, and they're throwing a one hitter, but the game's kind of long, and there's not energy like that goes with baseball, that goes with football, and football, they pipe the sound in. I'll say this for Boston and for me and for opening day, I thought, me, you know, I'm probably not going to go to opening day. It's probably going to be okay that I'm not going to opening day. There aren't a lot of tickets, and everything I go to opening day for is hanging out with people and seeing people and waving hello to people and seeing people I haven't seen, people I won't see all year. It's like Preakness was like that. And I guess I'm going to miss out this year a little bit. And I guess that was part of the take. And the other part was this, and this hit me. I was watching that incredible Gonzaga UCLA game. Well,
we're going to talk. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, I was.
Go ahead.
But early in the game, they scan the crowd. And this is when the game's 25-22. It was a close game the whole way. But and they had a section, and I took a screenshot of it. I didn't share it. I went to share it, and I just said, nah, I don't feel like it. But there was a dude in the middle of all the cutouts, and there were like these two good-looking college girls wearing UCLA stuff in the middle of a bunch of other cutouts. But the section wasn't any different than Fenway Park. There were like eight people in it, and they're on the roof of a football stadium. John Feinstein was tweeting about like how far away he was, and right, he couldn't see anything. And I'm like, well, John, they've been doing this for 30 years in domes, dude. Like it was like this in the Kingdom in 1979. But either way, it really spoke to me. Like, I want to go to Merriweather. I want to have a beer. I want to go to a concert. I want to like do all that stuff. I want to go to a ball game. I don't know that I want to go like this. I'll watch it on TV. It looked a little lonely in Boston, even though we were kicking ass. It didn't look like it was fun. You know what I mean?
Well, I can't wait. I'm a little different than that. I told,
are
my
you
grandson,
going?
No, I'm not going. I told you the other day, we're going to wait, I think, until June 1st.
No, you just said, I can't wait, and now you're telling me
you're
going to
wait. Well, what I mean is, I'm talking about getting back, but it's still going to be small crowds June 1st. I guess what I'm saying is, I can't wait to get back regardless of the size of the crowds. I said to my grandsons yesterday, I said, I can't wait. Jake loves him some big boogs. He doesn't like the regular boogs. He likes the double meat boogs. You know, he's like every other growing teenager. And I don't care if there's a couple of people in my section. There's something, you know,
Why are you waiting to go back? I mean, you've gotten the vaccine. Why wouldn't you wear a mask and just go down to the game? If it's nice and it's 72 degrees, why wouldn't you and I do that together?
Oh, I would probably go with you if you wanted to go. When I say us, we typically go as a group, typically go with my grandsons and other family members. And they've made some decisions since they haven't been vaccinated yet. And
I would want to go see this kid Zimmerman pitch because, you know,
yeah,
my dad would say, let's go see that kid from Loyola pitch.
Hey,
you know,
I'm all in. You know, you want to go? And, you know, Linda and I run out there.
Well, it gives me a reason to go. Like, you know, that's how I feel about it.
We'd love to do that.
And I think opening day is a tougher ticket. Then after that, it becomes like,
right,
you know, if you want to go, you go.
Let's do it. And you know what I was struck by, and I mentioned earlier, and again, it's small sample size, but I'm willing. I'll ride this wave until we get spanked in Yankee Stadium or whatever is about to happen. But, you know, what I was struck by, you know, I'm a Mike Elias fan. I'm a Sid Medall fan. You know, I loved I love the analytics book. What was it? An Astro Ball or whatever it was called. And, you know, I think we're beginning to see the fruits of that labor. And I was struck, Nestor, we're going to have Ron Cassie on, as we said, later this week. And as I was rereading the article in Baltimore Magazine, getting ready for Ron on 1954, he talked about the important moment in Oriole history where they hired Paul Richards, and we'll do that in detail with Ron, but began to talk about the Oriole way. And actually read this after my post, after opening day, when Means looked like, you know, the second coming of, you know, I don't know, Scotty McGregor, I guess. That was a Scotty McGregor a game as we've had in a long, long time. And I posted that, so you're telling me that pitching and defense still works. And that way back in 1954, the Orioles made a decision under the leadership of Paul Richards to pursue pitching and defense. And over the weekend, and I think we're beginning to see that in the Elias era, I was thinking, with the guys we've had plodding around in the outfield the past few years, when we've been able to run out of an outfield the first 3 days of Austin Hayes in left, Cedric Mullins in center, and Anthony Santander in right, three guys who are potentially gold glove outfield, I thought, man, been a long time since we've seen guys that don't circle balls and you hold your breath to see if the ball's going to pop out of the glove, you know, all the craziness that's going on. And, you know, I think you begin to see it. And the way that Elias plugged some holes, the way he, you know, not that this guy's going to be an all-star, but the plugging in of Michael Franco at the end, the foresight to take a gamble on Matt Harvey. I don't know about you, Nestor. Actually, this is a question for you. I expected to see Matt Harvey, and again, small sample size, throwing the ball 88, 89, moving it around a little bit. Matt Harvey hit 94, 95. Now, I know everybody throws mid-90s nowadays, but did you expect Harvey to be throwing 94, 95?
Well, I think the issue is going to be, where is he in June and July? I think that's going to be an issue for a lot of the pitching in baseball when last year was truncated, right? I mean, they didn't get an opportunity to see it. As I said, you know, they did the Orioles a favor. The plague was, you know, they said the beauties of the plague or the beauties of COVID. We'll give a shout out to Jackie McCusker at the Nacho Mamas for that. But, you know, part of it is the Orioles didn't take 100 beatings last year. And, you know, part of the developmental part of what they do, the teaching part of what they do, video, science, spin rate, tons of video and angle work for all of these pitchers and how they're gripping balls, real not fundamental, beyond fundamental, you know, breaking down every single nuance of the game, the science part of it. And Luke and I, you can find that out at Baltimore Positive, had a long, long conversation about that and what that's done for John Means and what that's done for Cedric Mullins, but what that also hasn't done for, you know, a bunch of other guys who didn't make the grade. And I've said this, and this should speak to you. You'll appreciate this because you met me in 1982 as my guidance counselor and you wanted me to be educated. You wanted me to be well-rounded. Little did you know the little chunky monkey that you met back in 1982, you'd be doing a radio show with called Baltimore Positive all these years later, but you want people to be educated. You want well-rounded people. It really feels to me like if you're going to play for the Orioles, the science part of it, you know, Matt Harvey wanting to come and saying, hey, you know, they're doing things in a way that's going to allow me to maybe still pitch when I'm 35 years old because I'm holding the ball the right way or all of these things. The Mets just had some guy to, you know, rub chewing tobacco and Old Spice on it and told, you know, because he was doing it the way, you know, Buck Showalter did it in 1982 in the Bronx. And like, that's not the way they do it anymore. And the fact that the Orioles are doing it that way and having success with a Mullins and a Means and some of these guys that were around during Duquette or Santander, who was sort of discovered by Duquette as a Rule 5 guy, that would attract a certain kind, not knuckleheads, Not guys that Aubrey Huff, C-ball, hit ball, moron, Aubrey Huff. And it's been well played out what a moron he is on the internet. But it is not a game for morons. And quite frankly, and Luke and I have had this conversation, and as much as you love me as a student, and somewhere I found my old transcripts from Dundalk High in the 80s, algebra was not my thing, right? Like trigonometry, and like I never went in that direction. My dear friend Ed Mullen and I were discussing crab cakes last week. I'm not STEM-y. I was more verbal and, you know, all whatever that is. But the math part of this, if you're attracted to that, a Messina, a Palmer, a Mike Flanagan, you know, deep thinking guys that wanted to play angles and numbers and spin rate. And Mark Williamson was one of those kind of guys. Just that it's not going to be an old boys game anymore. It's going to be a game about science. And that's either attractive or it's unattractive to me for what it's done to the game with shifts and the friggin' 4-hour game on Sunday. Like, it's just
no, they've got it, Nestor. They
have problems with the game, but what I'm saying from a science standpoint, they're going to attract smarter players here who want to improve and are willing and are willing to use science to do that because you have to be kind of smart to buy into all this to pay attention to it.
Well, there's no doubt, and it appeals to a certain player. They have to, and I'm glad to see they're experimenting in the low minors with a couple of rule changes this year. The one that I would put in right away is I would mandate that two infielders be on each side of second base. I think all the shifting and all has made, as you said, it's made the game in some sense. I understand why you think I'm a dinosaur. I get that. The game has to do something to appeal to a new generation of fans.
Well, they canceled an All-Star game in Atlanta. I'll get you into politics on that in a moment.
Yeah, we'll get into that. But before we leave the good news of the opening series, if there's a better story, and boy, this is personal to you because you've lived it, than Trey Mancini. I mean, you talk about a guy. You can just see it in his face. Not that he wasn't a good kid before. Not that he didn't love the game before. But my goodness, you can just sense that it's all in perspective. It's like, as he said, hey guys, a year ago, I wasn't sure I was going to live. Playing baseball again was the furthest thing from my mind. And to watch... You know, I keep saying, Nestor, and boy, I'm struck by it. I'm struck by it every day by some of the stupidity that and nastiness that consumes people. And I keep saying, we've just got to be better. So on that front, I was so heartened by watching the response of the Boston fans and the Boston players. And I assume Trey's going to get that wherever he goes. And I thought, okay, there we go. We can be better. Maybe it takes a poor young 27-year-older to get cancer and beat it to make us. But it's in there. It's in us. You know, I saw this. You mentioned politics. I saw this stupid thing online where a bunch of people didn't like some outfit that the first lady wore. And I thought, I am so done. And this is across party lines. I didn't like it when Democrats would criticize the former first lady, Melania Trump, over some shit. You know, stop. Who cares what somebody's wearing? Let's focus on what brings us together. Let's focus on trying to understand our neighbors. Let's stop the silly screaming and trying to put people and pigeonhole people into certain boxes. Let's try to celebrate humanity. You know, yesterday we never talk religion on here. You know, but yesterday was also the first day that Linda and I were able to journey back and into our church, which happens to be Catonsville United Methodist Church, whatever faith or atheist, whatever you are, it doesn't really matter. Everybody gets their spiritual nurturing from someplace. But We sat outside. Everybody brought their own chairs, and we had 10 to 12 feet between every chair, and it wasn't by any sense a normal service for an Easter Sunday. But I did comment during the service. I leaned over to Linda and I said, you know, there's just something good about seeing a community come together again. And there are all kinds of beliefs, I guarantee you, in that church community. I know that church community, and people are all over the place. But for that 45, 50 minutes, there was no politics. There was no anger. There was nobody screaming about the pandemic. It was just people coming together to do something communal. And we have to do more of that. So that's my sort of pontificating for today. Hey, before we're coming up on our time, before we get away, how about this Final Four? Holy mackerel. Mother McCree,
well, I mean,
you ever seen anything
like
it?
The game on Saturday night was sort of an instant classic, right? So you hope for a couple of those every year, whatever they are, right? Those memorable things you'll talk about. I mean, I think of Keith Smart shots and the, you know, Valvano and, you know, Sidney Lowe and like the whole deal, right? So,
well, let me tell you which ones I thought. That's great. You brought two more to mind. I thought of, because I'm much, much older. I'm going to give people a little history lesson. Go back, read about the 1974 Maryland Lefty Frizzell,
yeah, the North Carolina
NC State
game,
103-100. In overtime. It's the game, and I always have to remind my grandchildren, at that time, when UCLA was winning all of those championships under John Wooden, there were only 16 teams in the tournament. So you were in the Sweet 16 if you made the tournament. Maryland losing that game, because most pundits thought Maryland was the second best team in the nation to David Thompson's NC State team, Tom Burleson's NC State team.
Well, it really begat the modern tournament.
They went to 32 teams the following year. So
I knew that they could make more money.
Well, sure, but that game, the outcry from that game, took them from 16 to 32. And then the other game that I know you'll remember very, very well. If I say to you, 1999.
I have no idea what game you're talking
about.
If
I say to you, Grant Hill to Christian Laettner.
Oh, okay. Yeah, absolutely.
The length of the court pass against Kentucky, 104-103. Laettner catches it right, foul line extended, turns without waiting, and buries the jump shot.
I was at Straps in the Parkville Square DJing that night. From my man, Johnny Kutz, the Godfather. So there's a shout out to the late great Godfather. So yeah. I remember, well, you remember where you were when it happened, right? Like that's,
amazing.
That's when those things happened. So the Gonzaga, UCLA,
I mean, not 99, I said 99,
well.
Not 99, way before 99. I gave you the wrong year. I was thinking they had a reunion.
No wonder
I
got it wrong.
Yeah. I gave you the wrong year.
It was probably like more like 93.
1992, actually.
Okay.
1992. So
I was where I was. I was at Straps when that happened.
Yeah, 1992, Grant Hill, Christian Laettner. So that's what happened. And you know, you and I, occasionally we're like blind squirrels. Occasionally we get it right. I think you and I thought, as this tournament evolved, we thought, if it's not Baylor and it's not Gonzaga, there's going to be an upset along the way. Because I think as the tournament started to play out, you and I thought Baylor and Gonzaga were a step above. And
I thought Illinois was better than they were. So,
well, that was early on. That's what I said. As it began to evolve, we thought the Big Ten was better. And my brother,
well,
you
Gonzaga's
know,
the best team. Right? I mean, there's no doubt about it.
I think so. I think that's what we're going to find out. And my brother, the legendary basketball coach, you know, probably should be in the high school Hall of Fame if there is such a thing, pointed out, he said, every year you're going to win one game that you aren't supposed to win. And Gonzaga was fortunate that game was in the semifinals. So,
I get the legendary Mike Moeller on Talks and Basketball.
Oh, man. He'll break it down. Hey, listen.
Is he bored
on
these days? Just sitting around watching basketball? Is that what he's doing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
well, good. I'll get a Guinness with him. We'll do that.
Yeah, listen, he would be a great guest. He's in you know, he's helping to run the BMW Classic that's coming. We're gonna have the county executive and the PGA Tour folks on.
Here's a tribute to your brother. His first sponsorship, the first sponsorship ever of my show, was Moosehead Beer, and they had green, like it was green like this. The moose is loose, and I still drink it and enjoy it immensely. It's probably my favorite beverage.
There you go.
In the world, due to your brother Mike Moeller, who coached a lot of basketball.
Heck of a lot of topics that we didn't get to. We'll get to them next week on the recon.
We didn't get to John Angelos and Brandon Scott getting together to bring the All-Star game to Baltimore. Marty Conway and I did a whole dissertation on that. So you can go have at that. I know you love Marty. So we
I do. I do love that. We've got former Lieutenant Governor Michael Steele coming on. As I said, we've got Ron Cassidy
gubernatorial
coming on
candidate
later.
Did you say gubernatorial candidate, Michael?
Well, we'll ask him that. We'll throw that out to him and see what he has to say.
We had Wes Moore last week, but, and you waited to the end. You were like afraid to ask him.
We worked it up, man. We you know, you got to work up to these things. So we've got all kinds of outstanding things happening out there. We'll be talking a lot of politics next week.
I'm the velvet hammer. I just bring it, man.
We'll be going over all this on the recon next week.
Don Moeller, you can find him out at Baltimore Positive. You can find him on the front porch. You can find him on Twitter, certainly on Facebook, getting mouthy, especially for all things. I can't believe I didn't lure him into a Georgia, John Angelos, Brandon Scott. You know, by next week, they'll place the All-Star game in Colorado or Milwaukee. We won't have to talk about, but that's okay.
Just feeling so good with the Orioles off to this start. We're heading to Yankee Stadium. Hopefully by next week, when we talk, we're still above 500. Go O's. Go Mike Elias.
Moeller's feeling so good about the Orioles, he wants to go back to 1954 with Ron Cassie from Baltimore Magazine. We'll do that. By the way, love the Max Weiss conversation last week, too. Next time Max comes on, I'm making her play the cello. I've decided that. I've got my El Guapo shirt on. CC, El Guapo in Catonsville. Get on over there. I was at State Fair that they had the blackened. It was unbelievable. Blackened chicken with the crab on top, and they serve it over the Brussels sprouts. Oh, blew my mind out that it was.
Nestor, I'm glad you mentioned that experience from State Fair. You know, they were so successful over the past year by these family meals. They now have decided, you can go to their website. Every night they're offering these family meals. You feed your whole family.
Evan told me I need to do the Danish ribs night. That's what he told me. He said next time Danish ribs are on,
they're incredible.
And obviously the lamb. You know, the lamb they do.
The lamb shank. The lamb shank's off the chart.
Mother's Day or like that, they'll do that. And all right, so look, I'm totally game. And it's just difficult because I come over. I'm like, do I want Mexican? See? And, you know, I mean, look at me. I love Mexican food. Or do I want State Fair? So I go to State Fair the other day. I sit at the bar and it's socially distanced. It's safe. It's cool. Nice breeze blowing in. And they're all welcoming back. Same as Fadley's. They were like, they call me Mr. Nestor at Fadley's. And I'm like, please don't call me that. So they don't call me Mr. in Catonsville. They call me a lot of things in Catonsville. They don't call me Mr. So he comes up, he's like, you're having the chicken and waffles, aren't you? I'm like, no. I said, no. And I messed up. I wound up ordering. Have you had the potato skins with the sauerkraut and the corned beef? So it's like Reuben.
The Reuben skins. Absolutely. I don't think there's a thing I haven't had. They're phenomenal. Last week we did El Guapo. That was incredible. So all kinds of good things happening. Hey, before we go, Nestor, and we do have to run, because you're such a Springsteen fan, I am going to encourage people to jump on Spotify. If they have not listened to Renegades,
I'm saving it. My wife and I were going to do it together. How long are the episodes?
I want to say the first one's about an hour, but
and
it is
audio. They're not video.
Audio. It's literally President Obama.
So they didn't. They don't set up a camera. You just have to listen to it.
Well, okay. Not that I'm aware of.
I've seen pictures of it. I just didn't know if it was a video
listened
or whether
while
it was
I was
audio.
Walking. Okay. So I don't think it's video. Okay. But I'm telling you, it's President Obama and the boss sitting in the boss's barn. You know where all the guitars, where they record all the music, and they just talk about life. I came back the first day and I said to Linda, I can't describe to
was
you.
Was it obvious they don't know each other well when they sit down?
No, it's actually the obvious. It's actually the other, which is
that they have spent time together.
They did not know each other well.
I always know this with you when you have a guest on, and you know with me when I'm with people that right. I, you know, that I've spent personal time with. It's obvious. It really is, right?
Well, there's a actually yes, absolutely. And what is very cool about this is they tell the story of not knowing each other very well in the beginning.
Oh, see, okay. All right, you're reeling me in, Mueller. You're giving me something
Obama
I'm
thinking,
have to do.
Obama thinking Bruce is very shy and not easy to talk to. And then I'll leave you with this one tidbit.
How long is the whole thing? How many hours is it?
You know, I don't know. That's a great question.
How long have you been in?
I'm finishing up episode one. That's
dude, you're skinny as a rail. You're walking around Catonsville. The weather's about to get good.
Well, I just started. I just discovered it. Here's my last tidbit.
When you get to the end of it, let me know whether it's right. 3 hours or six, because right. like I may save this. We're planning a Nag's Head trip. I may save it. You know what I mean? For the road. You know what I mean?
Perfect.
Like, I'm trying to figure out what. This is how I do things, Don.
Tell me how long it's going to take me
and let me figure out where it fits.
For the car. One of my favorite moments, because all of us husbands can relate to this. There's this moment. Evidently, Michelle Obama and Patty Scafflia. How do you say her last
Scalfa.
Name? Nestor?
Scalfa.
Patty Scalfa. Hit it off right away, and they become good buds. So they're having dinner, you know, Bruce and Patty are having dinner with the president and the first lady and vice versa. And the president said, but Bruce, you're killing me. He said, because inevitably after these dinners on the way home, Michelle will be saying to me, now, do you see how well Bruce listens to Patty and how he pays attention and how attentive he is? You need to pay more attention to Bruce. And the president goes, come on, baby. He says he's 10 years older than I am. He's had more practice. So that's the gist. That's the tone of the thing. It's spectacular.
Right. Well, you've reeled me in, Mueller, once again with your PR.
Renegades, Spotify,
all
Bruce
right,
Springsteen, President
Obama.
This
is what we do on the recon. We try to get together and read the room as with Marty Conway. All right, find Don out on the interweb. Find me, Nasty at WNST.net. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat. All of our sponsors and our friends at Wise Markets for these wise conversations. We are WNST.net, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.